Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. Today, we'll preview Saturday's match against Crystal Palace. Can we eclipse our record points total? We need 3 points in this game, and then that mission is complete. We'll also have the last word on Saturday's fabulous win over Southampton. We'll react to the sad news that Joe Bryan is going to be leaving Fulham Football Club. We'll also react to the Fulham Supporters Trust's new Affordable Fulham initiative. In part two, I'm going to be speaking to Dan Morgan from James's Place about Mental Health Awareness Week. They're on a campaign to try and get men to open up and talk a little bit more because, of course, suicide is the biggest killer in young men in this country. And in part three, we've got some of your emails. No, this will catch you on today. We're saving a good one for next week. I am joined by Jack Collins. Hello.
Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. How you doing?
Good, thanks. And he's back on the Thursday Club. Drew Heatley, hello.
Hi, Sammy. I've had a croissant this morning to channel my inner Peter.
Just to channel your inner journalist mind. Thanks for coming on again, mate.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Right, let's get both your thoughts then on the Southampton win on Saturday. And Drew, we should start off by saying congratulations, because you went to Southampton, not by car, not by plane, not by bus, not by train, but you cycled all the way there. Question one, how's your ass?
Surprisingly chirpy, actually. I think time in the saddle leading up to it pays off, because I never reached more than a 5 out of 10 pain. So I'm actually okay, thanks.
I mean, it looked like super fun. I actually... So I stood next to you at the Southampton game, and that was kind of where all the people doing the cycle away was. So felt like you made loads of new friends. It looked like a just awesome time you had. I assume you'd thoroughly recommend for any future away day cycles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, usually these sorts of things, you come away and people ask you about it, and a couple of days later, you're like, yeah, it was all right. But I still gush about it now because it was one of the most rewarding things I think I've done. You know, to meet all of those Fulham fans, there was 40 of us, and some of which I'd, a couple of whom I'd met before, most of whom I hadn't. And, you know, you're involved in such an epic sort of 12-hour journey for us in the back peloton, the slower ones, a 12-hour journey. It was a nine-hour journey for the ones at the front. But you sort of, you make all these new friends, and it's a big challenge, and then the euphoria at the end of it, and top it off with a lovely win in the sun. The foundation does excellent work, and I found out a lot more about it in the last sort of 2 months having been involved in this. And I next season, just have a look at the May away day, and anything sort of in a 100-mile radius that could be the one, put it in your diary, and I thoroughly recommend it.
Might be a cycle to Luton if things go their way.
Hopefully not.
Not excited by the prospect of going to Luton again, Jack?
I don't think anyone's ever been excited about the prospect of going to Luton unless they're going to Luton Airport to leave Luton, right? Like, that's
good airport, to be fair, for what it is.
That's all I'm saying.
But heck of a story for Luton to be.
Oh, yeah, great football fairy tale. Great football fairy tale. So is Coventry, to be perfectly honest with you. By the time it's released, they might be out. But, like, it's an amazing story. It doesn't change the fact that I don't want to go back to Kenilworth Road ever again. So... I'm afraid it's going to be, I'm fully on the Borough train, and then if not, then Coventry, and then if not, then we'll have to deal with Luton. But I was sad for Sunderland, and I was real sad for Patrick Roberts. I was up at the Sunderland game, the last one at home before the playoffs, the Watford game, and Pat Roberts scored an amazing 90th minute equaliser, and I was just like, bring him home, please bring him home. But I was gutted for Pat Roberts, and that Sunderland team were the fairy tale in themselves, right? You know, the fact that they'd got back to that point and they were sixth, having just been promoted. There was lots to like about that story as well. So lots of fun in the playoffs, full stop, I think, at the moment.
Oh, come on, you can't want Borough to go. Borough's so boring.
What do you mean? Any northeast away day, I feel like Don Betts, but any northeast away day is right up there because it means that you can go and spend time in Newcastle, in Sunderland, in Middlesbrough. These are places that are good to go to. They're enjoyable aways. Luton is not. I'm sorry, but like, if you'd rather go to Luton than Middlesbrough, you're tapped.
Call me Taps. I want to go to Luton next year. I've not been. I couldn't go to the game last year because I got COVID that weekend. So I'm.
Count yourself
Luton.
Lucky.
No, I want Luton, then Coventry. And Borough is a deep. I mean, Borough behind Sunderland. No.
I'm with you. No. I'm with you. And but, you know, apart from the fact that Luton is fodder for the football banter accounts, I think probably the story-wise, I probably want them up. I always like a new face in the Prem. I think most neutrals do. I know it's a cliche, but we do, don't we?
Yeah. Drew, just to talk about the match on Saturday, it's a weird one. There's not a lot to analyse. It was just a super comfortable 2-0 win that was always on the cards from minute one because Southampton offered nothing.
Yeah, we're always the reaped and rarely the reaper, so it was quite nice to travel down there and put the final nail in someone else's coffin in a relatively comfortable way. It was just pure vibes, wasn't it? It was the Mitro show. We were all waiting for it. You mentioned it, but I've never heard anything quite like it when he came on for Vinicius, and you look at the video back as well and the look on his face, it's just such a heartwarming moment. You almost forget why he was banned in the first place. It's obviously like he's coming back from some career threatening injury and everyone's so chuffed that he's back, but it was wonderful, and we all knew it was going to happen. I mean, we were walking through quite a nice park on the way to St Mary's. I know it's out in the sticks a little bit, but there is a nice park on the way, and everyone was draped in a Serbian flag, including somebody I was with as well. So it was just the Mitro day, but I was also pleased to see Vinny justify the starting as well. And as I think it was Elizabeth said on Monday, you know, his positioning there was not, you know, it wasn't luck. He's really flourishing in terms of just a real big sort of show of what happens when you've got a bit of confidence when you're a forward. And I think that's great timing for us because, you know, you don't want to go into this summer and think, okay, we've got several areas we want to strengthen and backup striker is one of them. Because I think now we can probably quite confidently say that he's adequate for his role in the side. So I was really pleased to see that.
Jack, honestly, at 2:01, did you think Marco had made the right call?
To be perfectly honest with you, we talked about it on the podcast and I thought it was kind of I thought it might have been a very smart call, not necessarily the right call, but I thought it might have been a smart call in that, do you want to throw someone without match fitness from the last 10 weeks? Or that kind of area of thing straight in for 90 minutes against a side nominally scrapping for their lives. Now, the Southampton we saw didn't scrap for anything, but you know, on paper, they should have been scrapping for their lives. And so to throw him into that battle without match fitness, etc., I thought might have been a bit of a gamble. The last thing we want now, you know, with these couple of games coming up in the summer, is for Mitrovic to get injured, right? That is the last thing that anybody needs right now. He's just come back, obviously, from an 8-week suspension. He's also come back from an injury that we saw kind of sit with him for a long, long time. I don't think you want to aggravate that. And Carlos Vinicius did really well against Leicester and then came off the back of it and did really well here against Southampton as well. And I completely agree with Drew. It was nice to see him get his flowers. It also meant that Mitrovic's entrance became this moment, right? And I actually think that maybe that added to the mystique of the day. Obviously, I wasn't there. I was watching it from a villa in Malaga, which was quite a surreal experience. But it was what it was. And, you know, you get to these points and that moment, you could hear it, you know, through the screen. I'm looking at this going, this is unbelievable. The noise. They hadn't even cut to the substitutes bench. And the noise, I was like, oh, Mitrovic is coming on. Like, this is the moment. And then he was fated to score, wasn't he? So that was there are a couple of nice bits about it. I think that in hindsight, it's easy to say that it was the right call. I think it looked like a sensible, if not correct call to begin with, is probably how I would have put it.
Jack, just quickly talk us through your stag do schedule, because it's some I've never heard one quite like yours. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's been three in the last 3 weeks, which has been pretty full on. And then I've got a golf weekender this weekend, and then a wedding, and then another two stag do's in the weeks following that. So yeah, it's 5 in 7 weeks and a golf weekender.
Your bank account must be absolutely ruined.
Yes, it is. My liver, my bank account, my morality, decency, all of it. It's all gone. It's all gone. I've lost it all. So it is what it is. But yeah, it's been a pretty heavy couple of weeks.
Gents, any more comments on the Southampton game? Any more steaming hot takes before we move on to Crystal Palace?
The one thing that I really, really loved, and, you know, there was obviously all the headlines were going to be about Mitrovic, and then there was the chat about Vinicius because he came in. But Harrison Reed being the best player on the park on a day that relegated his former club, just magnificent, I thought. Like, I thought he was absolutely everywhere. I thought he was brilliant against Leicester and then absolutely sensational against Southampton. So just a word for him, because he's come back in. I think he's responded to the addition of Sasha Lukic in January by upping his performance levels again. And it has been really lovely to watch over these last couple of games how much Harrison Reed remains the heartbeat of this football team. And just to kind of drop that kind of performance, you can imagine, in so many ways, we've kind of seen it happen to us. We'll see a former player come back and run us off the park and be like, oh, damn, can't believe we let go of him. But Southampton and Harrison Reed in particular, for the fee that they got for him, for the fact that they haven't really got a player in that mold within the team who would be able to be that kind of destructive and yet creative presence within the middle of the park. I was made up for him that he was able to go out there and prove his worth and just be like, by the way, I made the right call. I thought it was a lovely sort of sub-narrative going on.
Yeah, completely. I always found it surprising when a club like Southampton was able to let a player of his clear, evident quality go. And I always was like, maybe if it was a top six club, you'd be like, okay, yeah, I can see how Harrison Reed can't fit in here. But I always wondered, Drew, like, God, you must have some great players. You must, if you've got to just be able to go, oh yeah, he's surplus to requirements. When evidently, even, you know, we obviously the first season we had him, he was on loan in the Championship, and he was brilliant for us that year. It was quite clear to me he was Premier League quality. Just kind of surprising, really.
Well, I think it's symptomatic of the feast and famine nature of the way that Southampton are operating in the past few years. You can see they let go of players like Matty Target as well. You know, when yes, it's going well, you these players are surplus to requirements. But I think, you know, when that cycle sort of switches, and sometimes it is quite risky, blood in the youngsters and the way that they've been doing, and you can look back at it and say, well, actually, you probably should have... Probably should have kept both of these players, but alas, they sort of, that was the way they were going, and it works for a while, but it's like swinging a bucket of mud around your head. As soon as you stop swinging it, it drops on you. So and that's kind of what happened with Saints. So yeah, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but yeah, you could make a quite a decent team of players that they probably let go in the last sort of 5 to 10 years, probably, I'd imagine.
I mean, I read a brilliant article. It's actually been out for a month, but I only read it on Monday. It was in The Athletic by Oliver Kay, and it's called Stagnation, Fifth Season Syndrome and Staying Afloat in the Premier League. I'll put a link in the description of the podcast. And I mean, it really got me questioning the point of life a little bit, because it was a bit of an existential look at the teams that are outside, let's say, the big seven now. I mean, he kind of included Everton in that. Basically, the sides that come up, come down, how long is your shelf life in the Premier League? And it nicely leads us on to Crystal Palace, because they were kind of the root of the article about how Palace have just stayed up, but they've done it under Roy. But basically, it talks about all these teams over the years, and Fulham have kind of been there, but maybe not quite as headline grabbing as others. You think of teams like Swansea, Southampton are a clear case. These clubs, Jack, that get modelled as the blueprint, the way to stay in the Premier League. And right now, you're probably looking at teams, the three teams that seem to get banned around, mostly Brighton and Brentford, but Fulham are kind of coming into that conversation if we keep up this level of performance. And just makes you realise that football is so cyclical. Brighton will probably get relegated in the next 10 years. So will Brentford. So will we. Southampton have had their 10 years now. Now they're on the decline, but they've been circling the plug hole for several years. The Leicester one's a bit weird. Let's maybe put that aside. That's been extravagantly fast, but yeah, I think it's just the nature of it. Now, I read that article came out of that. Yep, we'll go up, we'll go down, we'll be good, we'll be bad. This will happen forever. Nothing lasts forever.
Well, I was reading something similar. I was reading Jacob Tanswell's look at Southampton's relegation and how it kind of played out. And all the comments in the bottom were 3 years ago, we were being hailed as the model. He was like, and it's just a warning. It was a Southampton fan saying, a warning to Brentford and Brighton fans who are currently being hailed as the next thing. It was like, everybody's time comes, your big players eventually get poached, and you make one mistake or one bad transfer window where you don't get the players that you need into the club to, you know, to maintain it. And suddenly you're fighting relegation, and the next season it's harder to bring better players in because you're then not seen as a stable Premier League club. You're seen as a club fighting relegation, and the kind of vicious cycle continues. So yeah, I completely agree. It's just somehow how it is. And you look at this, I was thinking about it last night for Saints. They had a season, must have been 6-7 years ago. Obviously, they finished in the top eight 3 years in a row in the Premier League at one point. They went and they played Inter. They beat Inter at the San Siro. Inter in the Champions League final. I mean, obviously, we're 7 years on. It's a completely different Inter team. But Southampton went to San Siro and played Inter. And they had their own moment in the European sun. And it made me think about, you know, our run to the Europa League final and all of the above. And it does just kind of get you to that point. You're like, oh. Well, just after a while, it all just goes down the pan, I suppose. That's unfortunately the nature of things. Unless you get bought by a Gulf state, apparently. It's apparently the only way out of the cycle of malevolence, which I'm not sure is the right answer either. So West Ham, for example, are in two European semi-finals in 2 years. You know, they might be in a European final this year. I wouldn't be surprised if West Ham are relegated next year. Never mind, like in 3 years' time. That's madness. The whole thing is insane, but that's where we are.
Life sucks, and then you die. That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you.
Yeah, it was. Honestly, I read that article and just went, oh, well, that's not going down my sails. Enjoy it while it lasts is basically my way. If it was the too long, don't read. But do read it.
That's it. Ride it out, though. Enjoy it while it lasts. We talked about this in the Championship and the fact that we were, you know, riding that wave and we scored, what, 19 goals in 3 games. And I remember doing a piece being like, enjoy this, like drink it in, because there is so much of this that doesn't happen on a regular basis. Like, when's the next time we're going to score 19 goals in 3 games? Like, even if you're relegated, the chances of going on that kind of like destructive run straight away, you know, that took us 3 cycles to build in the Championship and the Premier League kind of bouncing up and down. These good years and like Southampton being comfortable and winning 2-0 away at St. Mary's against a side that were going down, you know, these are the things you're like, we should drink those moments in. And we have to, because that's the way of the world in football. Now, you know, we might get a 5-6 year run here in the Premier League. And I'm, you know, hoping against hope that we do, that we continue to build and we can start to stabilize ourselves, et cetera, and kick onwards and maybe go on another European adventure, all the above. But none of it lasts, you know, it's all candles in the wind.
No, it's very interesting. And the article actually does give some good hope for Fulham going into next season, that actually second season syndrome is not as much of a thing as people think. It's fifth season syndrome, if you're asking. But there'll be plenty more time for us to look at the existential points of Fulham and football in the summer. Let's look ahead, though, to this Saturday, Drew, because things need to be achieved. That thing is 3 points, a record points total. And kind of fitting / kind of mean that the it would be against the manager who set that points total that we'd one-up him. But such is life, and I'm sure Roy will be delighted for us, apart from the fact he won't be delighted to lose because he's obviously a competitive manager. But yeah, Crystal Palace on Saturday, it feels like a big occasion.
Yeah, and I think I'm really, really desperate for us to get that over the line, because if we do, I think... I think that the argument will have to be it is our best ever Premier League season. I appreciate that we finished two places. We finished at seventh with the last time we got 53 points and qualified for Europe. I appreciate that's happened. But, you know, 15 wins, seven away wins, all of these different records that have tumbled, I think you'll almost forget about them if we finish on 51 or fewer. So I really, really hope that we finally eclipse it. It would be poetic against Roy, but that kind of makes me wonder whether it's written in the stars, if that's such a thing. But it's nice. It's nice to have a little bit of self-imposed jeopardy on a game this late in the season when we are safe. I mean, I've got my eyes firmly on winning that West London League. And I think it's completely on if you look at Brentford's fixtures. I think it's completely possible. So, yeah, I really hope that we tie the bow around this because, as I say, all of those really other great things that I've been, you know, talking about drinking it in, I kind of almost take for granted the 15th win of the season, and it's the record. We've never had it before. It's, you know, it's a crazy amount of games considering there's a 38-game season for a club like us. So I hope that we can tie it all up nice and neat and say, cheers, Roy. See you later if this is your last time here as a manager. And just have a real lovely day in what might be sunshine.
Well, it might not be his last time as a manager. They're looking at offering him a 1-year extension, Crystal Palace. So there might be another Roy visit next year. We can discuss whether that's the right decision for Crystal Palace, maybe. But Jack, you can't deny the job he's done. 5 wins, a draw, 2 defeats. Their run before he joined is just a sea of losses. They hadn't won this calendar year. It was the loss against Brighton and Arsenal that was the final nail in the coffin of Patrick Vieira. So well done to Roy. Nothing that particularly surprises us as Fulham fans that he was able to do that.
No, he came in, shut up the defence, let the front three run riot, and off they went. It was in so many ways, it looks simple, doesn't it? It's obviously not that simple to actually affect those kind of changes and actually to be there on the training ground sorting them out. But the effect has been relatively instantaneous. And look, as we know, he's stepped in and sorted clubs out in dire situations before, notably very close to home. But you're looking at that appointment and there were question marks over it. I think there were question marks over from a lot of people, from Palace fans, from other fans. You know, we go back to the start of the season and we obviously, you know, posted about the fact, but is anyone still questioning whether Alexander Mitrovic can do it in the Premier League? It's the same kind of thing, you know, in some ways. When you look back at the comments when Crystal Palace reappointed Roy Hodgson, and all of them are from opposition fans being like, see you in the Championship, et cetera, et cetera. And look, he's proved everyone wrong yet again. Now, whether he take a year extension, I don't know. I don't know. There is a part of me that thinks that managers of Roy's age, and I would say not obviously of the same standard, but someone like Neil Warnock, he's like, I don't want jobs in September anymore because I have no interest in working through the December months. And I'll take a job in February if you want. Like, that's all right. If you need me in February, give a buzz. But there's no way I'm standing on the touchline in the absolute pouring rain in the middle of December. It's not good for me at this age. So who knows?
Imagine getting to that stage in life and you, whatever job it is, and okay, I don't work. I'm retired. But seemingly every March, someone picks up the phone and offers me a 3-month job where I get paid £2 million.
Yeah. I wish I could just
imagine
do podcasts
that life.
March
you just you golf the rest of the year, and then you just like do a bit of work, fix a problem. What do you need me to do? Right, yeah, sorted. Thank you. Collect go. What a life! I agree, Jack. Surely that's what Roy wants to do.
I mean, I would be wanting to do, but maybe he is a man with more drive than I have. look, what looks like Wolf Zaha is out, so it's going to be very interesting to see how he recovers from that injury last weekend. But the form that Eze and Elise are in, I don't think anyone is going to look at this and be like, oh, this is going to be an easy ride. You know, Palace are in wonderful form, but those two in particular are playing some sublime football. And, you know, just the way that they combine, the way that, you know, Eze seems to pop up in the right time and the right place at some points and then create the right time and the right place for himself at other points. Elise's delivery from dead balls, his ability to rake a ball across the pitch. You know, they are two exceptionally talented footballers and they are flying under Hodgson. Look, they've been kind of flying all year, but this is, I think this is a new height he's unlocked, and he's just given them the freedom to go and play. And that Palace are no pushovers. This is a very different side to the one that we hammered on Boxing Day. You know, this is a tricky ask. And whilst there's a lot of, you know, poetry and narrative around the idea that we could beat our former points total against the manager who set the last one, I think that this is going to be a much harder game than anyone's really giving it credit for. Everyone seems to be like, oh, it's going to be great to beat the points total. I'm like, yeah, maybe. Let's see about that, shall
can't
we?
Catch us, though, can they, the slugs?
So, no, they can't catch us, so that's good. And neither, well, neither can Chelsea, I don't think. Or we, at least we will know by the fact that by the end of the weekend. But yeah, look, it's one of those... It's one of those fixtures that has a lot of like pleasantry about it. Obviously, I really enjoyed the advertising boards of on that Leicester Coronation Monday, which all just had a picture of Roy and said royalty in terms of booking your tickets for the Southampton this Crystal Palace game. But yeah, I think it's genuinely going to be quite a nice day. I just don't think it's going to be a particularly nice football match. In order, this is not going to be a comfortable 2-0 against Southampton. This is not going to be us racing into a, you know, a 3-0 lead against Leicester before half time. This is going to be a very tricky competitive game. And whilst it's going to be a lot of singing for Roy, singing for Marco, I think there's going to be, both fan bases are staying up. There's no real animosity between Fulham and Crystal Palace. There's a lot here that you're like, well, this is going to be a pleasant day out in everything but the football. I think the football is going to be very tight, very tense. And this is going to take a lot of willpower and effort to push this points total over the line. Arguably, if United are settled in the Champions League spots, the away day at Old Trafford might be a better option of beating this points total than this home game against Crystal Palace. And that sounds insane, but it might well be, because if they've got there and it's secure, then they'll probably ease off the gas a little bit with a FA Cup final against City to think about. So there's lots of things going on, but I'm excited for everyone to have a wonderful day out.
Do you know what I really hope doesn't happen? I hope we don't draw the next two games and equal the tally, because that's just annoying. Nobody wants that. We want to beat it. They want to equal it. But it's football fandom in a nutshell, isn't it? We're all talking about this Palace game as the one, and we're all discounting the United game, because we're like, well, if we don't do it against Palace, then we're not going to do it. We need a win tomorrow on Saturday against Palace. But actually, you're right, Jack. It could be United if they've not got anything hugely to play for on the final day. But I hope we don't draw it, because that would just be that'd be depressing.
I mean, Drew, Palace in defence as well, very impressive. And it was so weird, because the game against them this year was just so hard to read into because of the two red cards. But Fulham were dominant that day. I guess the thing that's exciting is the return of Mitrovic. And the big question is, will he start, or will he start Vinicius again? It feels like surely you're limbering him up to start Mitrovic.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, after Saturday, I kind of think they might keep Vinicius in the starting 11 and try and recreate the reception for Mitro in front of the Craven Cottage crowd. And again, like, if we were in the position that Southampton were in on Saturday, he would have started, make no bones about it. But we don't need to start him. So I don't think we will. I think Vinny will keep his spot, and we'll get a little ovation for Mitro around. It's probably going to be the hour mark again, isn't it? It's the arbitrary first substitution point. So I think that would probably be what happens on Saturday, and I think that's probably fine. I do think it was written in the stars for Southampton, but you know, who knows against what's going to happen against this Palace side. I do agree with Jack, it's going to be an entertaining game. Obviously, we know you're talking about the defence, we know Anderson well, and he knows Mitrovic well. Somebody he doesn't know as well is Vinicius, so who knows, but I think that'll be the way it goes.
Jack, do you agree?
I'm not sure. I think he might throw him in here, just, you know, to get that kind of that Craven Cottage crowd going on what is, again, it's that kind of, can you get through the pleasantries? Because I think if Mitrovic doesn't start, it becomes all about Roy. And I wonder if Marco Silva's aware enough to actually think that that's a thing. And I, like you said, he might not be, this might be his last visit to Craven Cottage as a manager. I wonder if throwing Mitrovic into the starting 11 becomes a catalyst for the crowd getting really, really up for it. Now, obviously, people don't really need that in terms of people aware of the points tallies and things. But I do think there's an element of being like, okay, Mitrovic isn't starting. Everyone's a bit like, oh, okay, cool. He'll come on at some point. We'll get right up for that moment. And actually, then the first 60 minutes will be about Hodgson, which I imagine Silva wouldn't particularly like. So we will see. There might be a little bit of that.
I don't feel like it'd be too much about Hodgson. Like, he is still the opposition manager at the end of the day. Like, I feel like he'll get his customary, like, little applause from the Hammersmith end, and he'll applaud the Hammersmith
end. There'll be
three
rounds of the Roy song in the first half if Mitrovic doesn't start.
Maybe.
It's just so easy to sing, isn't it?
It is.
I have an unhealthy unhealthy amount of love for Roy, and I know everybody does, and I'll probably do it. So I do agree with Jack to an extent. Like, I just can't help it. I always say, like, he's the only other man I'm allowed to, I'll call daddy, because I love him that much.
That's so good. So good. Grandpa Roy. That's the vibe. No, I do think there might be an element of saving Mitrovic's first 90 for Old Trafford. There's that kind of sitting in the background, isn't there? But I hope he starts him on the weekend. I do. I think it would be good for everybody to see Alexander Mitrovic back in that starting lineup.
All right. Well, we'll take a break there afterwards. I'm going to be speaking to Dan Morgan from James's Place. And just a quick note that whilst it's not the entire topic, we do reference suicide in this part too. So just a warning in case that is a potentially triggering thing. Part three, we'll come back and answer some of your questions. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. If you'd like to watch football matches and TV shows which aren't available in your region, or maybe you'd like to save money by purchasing flights from different virtual locations, then we've got an amazing deal with NordVPN, where you can get a massively discounted rate plus 4 free months by heading to nordvpn.com/fulhamish. Now, I've been using NordVPN for well over a year now. It comes in very handy very often. Particularly when watching sporting matches using my UK subscriptions when I'm abroad, or you can use it the other way around if you're in the UK and you want to use subscriptions from other countries. A subscription to NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, and you can use one account on up to 6 devices. So grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/fulhamish, and you can get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months all for free. Best of all, it's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So to grab that deal, go to nordvpn.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. It is Sammy here, delighted to be joined by Dan Morgan from James's Place. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So it is Mental Health Awareness Week this week, and I don't feel like mental health is something that we talk about on Fulhamish often enough, really. We know in 2023 that it is not something that now has a stigma attached to it. It is something that lots of people talk about all the time. And James's Place is a brilliant charity. They're based in London and in Liverpool, and they save the lives of men in suicidal crisis. They're a beacon of hope for ordinary people going through mental health challenges, diagnosed, undiagnosed. They're there for people in a tough place. So Dan, thank you for coming on. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what James's Place does and the role that they played in so many men's lives.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, essentially, we are just that. We're a charity that offers free life-saving treatment to suicidal men in Liverpool and London. That is, you know, our sole purpose, and it's to stop men dying by suicide. We've got professional therapists who can quickly get to the heart of what's going on with a man in their suicidal crisis. And I think that makes us unique because, you know, we are existing in a very sort of niche bracket there, but that makes us able to deal with men who are in crisis immediately. And the treatment that we deliver, you know, it's proven to work. We're evaluated regularly, and we're showing that we can take people out of a real crisis point and, you know, get them to a more sort of moderate way of dealing with what's going on with them. You know, we get to the heart of what's going on with men, and you know, you talk about the concept of speaking about mental health in 2023. Well, you know, I think one of the ways in which we deliver our treatment is to, you know, basically just get to the root cause of what might be going on with somebody. And that can often be somebody who's, you know, never spoken about an issue before, you know, never been able to verbalize maybe their feelings or what's going on with them. And I think it's important to have this conversation in a football environment. You know, I also work in football in fan media as well. And I think that, you know, often we can see that, you know, football is made up of a lot of diverse and different communities and different people. But often it's those people who might not be presenting with any signs that they're in a crisis or they're struggling. But it's often those people who, you know, might be suffering in silence, and when they're away from their mates on a Saturday at 3 o'clock, you know, are going through the worst times, the darkest times. And, you know, those are the people we want to reach and reach out to and tell them that, you know, we are a service that can help them.
Yeah, I mean, that's what scares me about suicide, particularly in men. I had a friend about 15 years ago who took his own life, and none of us knew. None of us had a clue, and none of us checked in on him, because we didn't even think there was anything to check in on. And, you know, I think that's how it can creep up on you and people in general. Is that what you find with James's Place, is that actually the people that turn up are not necessarily someone who you would naturally think has any problems in their life that can get to the stage that they would even think about taking their own life? That's how I often perceive the problem. And that's why there is such a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely right. I mean, we see men from so many different social makeups, and you know, and we're not lying when we say this could be anyone, and it could happen to anyone. You know, it's people who are often in crisis that's driven by very, very normal life events that we're all affected by. So, you know, obviously there's the cost of living crisis at the moment, but in terms of other factors, relationship breakup, work-related issues, you know, the idea of somebody just reaching a certain point in their lives and not knowing what their purpose is or why they, you know, why they sort of are on the journey they're on or how they've gotten there, and you know, the sort of existential thinking that can happen for all of us. So it's not people who are defined by mental illness, like I've said. It's often people driven by very normal life events, and that leads us to speak to people in every walk of life, really. You know, there's nothing that says, you know, a person who, you know, might have had a really difficult life and had a really difficult upbringing and you know, might not be handed the most luck or the luckiest hand in life, it can come through the door and then be followed by, you know, a corporate lawyer, for example, who, you know, is at the top of their profession and you know, academically is really, really reaching heights. But like you said before, it's the idea that there's not a real sense of these are the signs and symptoms. You know, people, and especially men, I think it's fair to say, are very good at hiding those feelings and putting them to the back of the room, if you like, and not bringing themselves forward. And in many ways, you know, that's the thing that we're trying to normalize. I think we are trying to normalize the word suicide, which is still very taboo. You know, we try not to offer mental health advice, but one of the things we do say around suicide is not to use the word commit, because, you know, it does intimate committing a crime, if you like, and suicide was illegal in this country, and it still has that. I think it still attaches that stigma that to commit suicide, you know, you are doing something wrong. We would often say, you know, to use the phrase "died by suicide," for example, as opposed to that. So it's just those little things that you can have a conversation about and try and normalize and try and bring to the fore. But we understand it's difficult with everyone.
Where, if someone was reaching that point in their lives, I must admit, I wouldn't know who to call. I guess the Samaritans would be my only kind of go-to guess. So where does James's Place come in? Is it a physical place? Is it a number? Is it a text? Is there a form online? How do you get in touch if, let's say, you are reaching your lowest ebb, you're going that way, and you just need someone in a moment of crisis, and yeah, you don't want to speak to your family or your friends or the mates that you go to football with. So what is the ways of James's Place helping someone if they were in that moment of real need?
We are in person. We are free, and we don't operate a waiting list. So the therapy and the treatment we deliver is face-to-face with a trained therapist, a therapist who's hired by us full-time. So there's three ways of coming to us, and it's all three ways essentially down the same route via the website. If you go to www.jamesplace.org.uk, you'll see a button in the top right-hand corner which says "Get Support." That will take you to an online survey form, and that will basically guide you through who is making a referral. And when I say three ways, a referral can be made by a professional body, so a GP or a crisis team or a support worker or anybody at all. It could be a concerned third party, if someone has disclosed maybe that they're feeling suicidal, they're actively suicidal, then, you know, that person can make a referral on their behalf. Or importantly, the person themselves can refer to us. We usually aim to have a man in the centre within 48 hours of a referral being made to us, so that they can just sit down with the therapist, try and explain a little bit more about what's going on, and then we'll see if we're the right service for them. You know, there's often times where we're not for different reasons, but we will then try and work with them to signpost them onto what is right if it's a specific care need that we can't meet, for example. But ultimately, Sammy, you know, we are an immediate service, because we want to deal with men who are, you know, having thoughts, plans to end their own lives, behaviours. You know, maybe there's a previous attempt there. You know, our head of service often says that it's men who see suicide as a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And, you know, I think that's a good way to put it, because considering this is the single leading cause of death of men under 50, and that men are three times more likely than women to die by suicide, you know, that happens quite a lot with men, that they feel every door around them is closing. We want to offer a door that's open, but it's immediate, it's crisis driven. So we're here to help those men. They'll usually work with us for about 2 months, and that's 6 to 9 therapy sessions with the same therapist in person. And then we'll work with them to look for more medium to long-term support once we finish our work with them.
Dan, obviously going to football, it's a very fun experience. You often do it with your mates, away days, all of that. But as you mentioned earlier, sitting down in the pub, watching the 12:30 and then talking about your mental health is not necessarily something that is often done. So how do you find that men can talk more in order to kind of prevent these problems at source? What are the resources that are out there in order to kind of make sure that men do share more? Because I think it's been quite widely proven that that is the best way of dealing with this in the very, very first instance, and something that we can all do more in order to not just help us, but also help our friends.
Men, like I say, you know, they will often find it very difficult to talk about any kind of psychosocial struggle that they're going through. But also, you know, I think what we see often is that, you know, male environments like football, for example, aren't always conducive to those conversations. And I know it's difficult to then sort of get into that a little bit more, that environment, and to promote and to, you know, to will such conversations and such brave conversations. But I think there is a space there for men who, you know, if they are feeling, you know, the way they're feeling, the more men who maybe, you know, have an experience, I'm not just saying with us, I think in general, you know, more men who are able to have an experience with their mental health and find hope the other side of that, and, you know, therefore them talk about their experience with other men, then I think that, you know, the more environments we'll create within football and other environments that are conducive to healthy conversations about this. You know, we have peer support groups now within James Place where, you know, the men who've been treated by us get together and they're able to talk about how things are. And, you know, I think that's something that we're seeing across the board, really. You know, there's now walking groups across the country. You know, Andy's Man Club is one to signpost to there across the country, where they get guys together to have just a general chat, which is facilitated every week. I went to a walking club a few weeks ago called the Proper Blokes Club in London, which is really good. You know, it's free, you can just turn up, and twice a week they'll just go for a walk for an hour or so, and you can meet some great people and you can interact with people. And I think that, you know, that interaction is a key form of this, because, you know, the sense of isolation and people being left with their own feelings often can lead to a sense of hopelessness. So, you know, we're not expecting, you know, a miracle overnight in terms of certain environments like football, where we know it can be very difficult. And, you know, obviously everyone wants to be out having a good time and forgetting about maybe what's going on with their lives. But I think there are communities and spaces where men's mental health and men's, you know, ability to communicate is being promoted. And that can only be a good thing, I think.
Dan, thanks so much for jumping on Fulhamish and telling us about the amazing work that you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. It is Sammy here with Jack Collins and Drew Heatley. Thank you so much to Dan Morgan from James's Place. All the links to James's Place and the work they do in the description below. It is Mental Health Awareness Week. And of course, I think always timely to remember to look after ourselves and our loved ones as and when we need to. Let's look at some of your emails. The first one here is from Liam, and this is about the FST's season ticket price campaign, which only came around yesterday morning, this morning as we're recording. He says, "Hi Sammy, how's it going? I've just seen the FST's season ticket price campaign, and although it's proof that they're trying, I just don't think it's direct enough. It feels far too passive. I also think that they might have left it too late. My other question is, do you think people will care if there's something planned on the first game of the season, or does that dampen new season vibes?" And that is from Liam. So yeah, the FST's campaign is called Hashtag Affordable Fulham, and they've taken some stories from fans that have got in touch with them about how they feel priced out by the season ticket price rise. Season tickets are already on sale until the end of May. There's only about 2 weeks actually left of the renewal window, which I'd strongly suggest getting in, because it really jumps up if you don't hit that window. Drew, I mean, I guess my first thing would be better late than never, but it does feel like once they're already on sale, I don't know what's going to change.
Yeah, I mean, my overriding feeling here is that it's a timing issue. And yeah, I think the horse has bolted, so to speak, which is which is a shame. You've got to be quick to mobilize these sorts of things. That, you know, we've done something before. I'm not saying that ours is any better at all. I'm just saying that timing is everything. And did you say there is something planned on the is that the plan, is to do something on
No, I think Liam, Liam was just proposing, like the first game of the season. Would that be, I personally think just like trying to launch something for the first game of the season would almost be,
it's far too late, and it's and it's exactly right. So it's the bad vibes. It's the start of a new campaign. Like by that point, look, nobody wants these prices to be hiked the way they have. We got, Lord knows, we've spoken enough about it. We are all on the same page when it comes to that. But obviously, by that point, you know, it's been paid. The window's gone. Three months in the rearview mirror. You know, installments are being paid. The fact of the way people are paying, it's done. I think that, you know, we've seen a sort of a pattern, as Faz has said before on the pod, that, you know, next season's renewal price is probably going to be this season's new price for the Hammersmith end, for example, and so on and so forth. So we have an idea of what's going to happen in the next 12 months. And, you know, as organizations, as the FST, as fan voice, fan-led media, we have a chance to plan something for next season if it happens again. You know, argument could be said that we could have done that already this year, but doesn't matter. This has all already happened. As you say, better late than never, but I'm just concerned that, yeah, the horse has bolted and now we're just, it's all after the fact and it's all a bit moot.
Jack?
Yeah, it feels a bit after the Lord Mayor's show, doesn't it? That's not a criticism. Obviously, these things take time to build. They take time to, you know, to make happen, but I just can't see anything changing this year now that the, you know, they're on sale, that we're at that point. You know, what would you do? What would they do? Refund fans who have already paid? It's just not going to happen. Like, it simply isn't going to work. So at this point, it's about continuing the conversation. And that's what I would say majorly in the FST's defense. They're continuing to drive the point home. They're continuing to push this. And that's important because it has to stay pushed. I wouldn't even say for next year's renewal price. I think this remains as a thing for the entire season. And it's not going to change the prices backwards, right? It's not going to change the fact of the season ticket, but it might make the club reconsider the idea of hiking them again next year. And I think, yeah, you know, we've shown it. And again, down the road, ticket prices are frozen again. It's their third year in the Premier League. They're still at their championship level of prices at Brentford. And that, you know, that's the sad kind of truth of the matter, that right now at those kind of prices, fans or people who've just moved to West London who are looking for a club to go and buy season tickets for, to support, who are driving a new fan base, who are building a connection with youngsters, are going to be going to Kew Bridge, not to Putney Bridge. And that's a real shame, because there is a major, you know, demographic in the middle of those two, which I think that Fulham are going to miss out on. And this has always been the point of it. It's not just that I think it's unfair on current fans in terms of the rises against what it looks like in terms of inflation in the middle of a cost of living crisis. It's also about this new fan base that Fulham need to continue driving. And look, they made a big deal, the club, of being like, oh, the Riverside is sold out. One, not buying it. Two, I just, like, who to? If it has sold out, like, who to? Because I don't know anybody who's gone, yeah, that seems reasonable. Yeah, I'll go for that.
Yeah.
So we're at that exact point now where this season, I think, has gone. As you say, the horse has bolted. We're trying to close the stable door. And that there's no point in that. The point is now to make sure that this settles for next season, that it doesn't go up again, that there is no, you know, hike next season in order to try and keep things back in line with how things are. And I think that driving the conversation is important. So the FST's campaign here is really important in that regard. But I can't see anything changing this season. I also agree, Drew, that I don't think that doing something on the first day of next season is particularly useful to anyone, really, because, again, they're not going to pay people back in retrospect. They're not gonna, you know, this is where it is. And so I think the best we can do now is make sure that it's very clear from the fan base that another price hike will not be acceptable next season.
Yeah, that's it. It's getting ahead, really. This season has gone. It's too late. I think what we've learned from the club and the Leeds debacle, you know, the Leeds was the only time I thought that they actually might backtrack here, and they never did, and they never seemingly came close. You have to almost get in ahead, and there is this thing that the FFC have looked into, that if next season's renewal price is this season's new price, then that is such a massive rise. And if that is allowed to happen, then that's Armageddon. This year, you might, just might be able to give them the argument that they have put this in line with other similar Premier League clubs, Palace, Brighton, etc. I'm not for one second condoning it, because I think it's short-sighted to still do, but next year, if they went to the price of the new prices, and I feel so sorry for anyone that has had to pay those through circumstance. I actually was speaking to someone on Saturday who just gave it up for a year because they had a baby, and then they've got to now pay the new price. And you're like, God, that's just like real shit luck. But yeah, that won't be stood for. And hopefully, maybe with this campaign, that's what the FST are getting at. But we need to be mobilised much quicker, I feel like, if we're actually to impact decisions as they happen. Maybe if something had been organised within the week that they were first announced, then maybe there might have been more pressure on the club. But as it happened,
even then, I genuinely think once they've been announced, it looks really like it would look bad on the club's part, and it would also make them look weak. And not necessarily to us, and I'm not saying that's the right thing. I'm just putting it out there that I think once the prices are out, the damage is done. See you later, goodbye. It has to be before that. It has to be in the discussions leading up to these prices. You know, it needs to be in the meetings with the club in February, not in May. Because as soon as those prices are set, I don't think the club are going to budge. I think that's where we're at. So it has to be done in the pre-meetings. It has to be done in the kind of battlegrounds before the war, before the storm, in so many ways. Because once they've set a price, they're going to run with it. And they know that their audience is captive. It's really sad, but it's just where it is. And there's so much of it that, you know, you end up with arguments online about people being like, this is the way that we're going to buy better players. I'm like, it's just not, is it? And so when you look at these things, they all need to be set out well in advance if you're going to actually make a difference to the decision-making, I think, within the higher echelons of the club.
Yeah. And one thing that I thought, like, a bit, this is a bit of an aside point, but I was at the Villa game and the Liverpool games away from home, and like, they weren't sold out, and they were quite far from being sold out. And look, they were difficult games to get to. It was a Tuesday and a Wednesday night away up in the Midlands and up north. It just made me realize, though, that like, we are not capped out as a fan base. Like, there is not a ceiling here. And when you look at Brentford and what we were talking about how they will attract the new fans and we sadly won't at those prices, it just annoys you long term as a club. Like, I think maybe there's this feeling, because we're sometimes selling out Craven Cottage at the limited capacity, that we are complete as a club, but we don't need any more fans. More fans don't in the stadium. And look, I know that away ticket sales are not really the revenue generator, although they do lose money by not selling those tickets, although we're talking fairly small margins. You just realize that, like, this club needs more fans. Like, it's not done. We're not one of the big seven clubs. We're not West Ham, who sell out every away end that they go to. There's actually no more space for any more fans. There's no benefit to it. Fulham are still growing and still need that kind of captive audience really to support us home and away.
But I also think that, you know, the more expensive you make home tickets, the less likely that people are going to travel for away games, right? It's simple economics. If you go, right, I've got, you know, let's say £1,000 to follow Fulham for the season, and you're going, okay, my season ticket is 500 quid, so therefore I might be able to get to 6-7 away days where the ticket's 30 quid and I can find cheap trains, etc. Fine. As soon as you make that, you know, you bump that up, you take away 5-6 of those away days, and you're like, okay, cool. And the kind of margins become smaller. And I think it therefore impacts on support for the club, you know, across the course of the season. I think you pay more for it and you go, okay, well, I'll have to cut out a couple of the aways next season that I would have liked to have gone to because I've had to pay an extra 150 quid for my season ticket. And that's just the economics of it, I think.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to a couple more questions before we finish. James Wilson talks about, okay, time to put on your Debbie Downer hats. Carlos Vinicius. He's had a great couple of weeks, no doubt. His overall stats for the season, like minutes per goal involvement, are pretty good. But he's obviously still a backup as long as we have Mitro and don't play with two up top. And it took him not just several games, but also a Dan James false nine renaissance in order to find a groove during Mitro's self-imposed vacation. So the question is, if Vinny needs a long run of games in order to be a capable backup, is he really a capable backup? James then says, sorry for the buzzkill, and I'm not saying I've already decided against keeping him around. I just feel that it's a question that needs addressing. And that's from James in North Carolina. Drew, your thoughts on James's question?
I'm not sure. If there is a backup striker who doesn't need a run of games to find his groove, I don't think, A, I'm not sure he exists, and B, if he does, I don't think he'd be at Fulham Football Club. So I'm quite comfortable, as I said earlier, with Vinicius as backup striker next term. I think there's so many different mitigating circumstances. Don't forget that he's only been at the club since the summer. You know, he's not as if he's part of the furniture and has been for years. I think that confidence grows with runs of games, but I also think it grows with, you know, time at the club and being comfortable in your own skin and in your own environment. So I think, for me, he's only going to get more capable. And don't forget as well, you know, he struggled because we weren't giving him necessarily the best service either, not to his feet. So I think once we started cracking that and we understand how to play to a different type of man up top, things started to click. So I think it's a mutual understanding that's developed and will continue to develop. But as I say, if there is somebody who can slot in, plug in and play and score, plug that goal gap as a substitute striker, I don't think they exist. And if they do, they won't be here.
Yeah. Jack, we should talk about the fact that it looks like Joe Bryan is going to be leaving this summer. And it looks like Bristol City have won the race, as they say on Sky Sports News, to secure his services. I guess one of those inevitable transfers, but tinged with sadness because Joe Bryan is a hero. He always will be. And build the statue.
Build a statue. Yeah, that's all I've got to say on it. Build the statue and I'll be happy. We'll always have Brian from the halfway line. And that's as simple as it gets. I think, look, he needs to go out and play some football again. It hasn't gone to plan. Down on the Riviera, he hasn't got that many games. The change of management didn't help. And he just seems to have been relatively frozen out. So he's just basically had a vacation year, which is nice, but it's probably not what he wants at this stage in his career. So going back to Bristol City seems to make sense. He obviously is still well-loved at Bristol City. And look, I think he will just leave with everybody's best ever wishes and those memories will last a lifetime. So, yeah, it's sad, tinged sadness. I'm glad for him that he's going to go and play some football. And, you know, thank you, Sir Joe, basically, is all I have left to say. Best of luck, Ashton Gate.
And that'll do for the podcast today. We've got some three-word pod names as ever. So feel free to pick your favourites out of this. Luke ZG says Shane Duffy testimonial.
That'll do. Done.
Jakob says Fulham Palace party. Mitro's royal return.
Nice.
From Branny. And our very own Drew Heatley here with Don't Wreck It, Roy. It's a little bit borderline four words.
There's a hyphen in the Wreck-It Ralph title, so it's completely okay.
It's a little bit touch. Can we adopt one of them? Can we adapt it? Could we go with like Fulham Palace Glow or something like that?
What? What do you mean?
Yeah, like, as in, everyone's just in a, like, basking in the glow of, like, staying up.
Oh, glow.
Season, Roy, glow. Fulham Palace glow.
Yeah.
You can't. But what's wrong with party? Because we're both up. We're both
I was trying to rhyme it with road, like the Fulham Palace road.
Oh, I get it. Oh, that took me way too long.
That's the bigger stretch than I did at any point during my cycle, mate. I'll be honest.
Okay, well, it's not gonna work. What about Fulham Palace Ode?
Just stick with one of the two you've got. I reckon either Mitro's Royal Return or Fulham Palace Party.
Right, Fulham Palace Party it is.
Yeah,
right, just wanted to rhyme it with the Fulham Palace Road. What's so wrong with that? No poetry in this podcast anymore. I'll tell you that for nothing. Gone down the path.
Thank you very much to my guest, Drew Heatley.
Thank you for having me, Sammy.
And Jack Collins.
Thank you, Sammy. Always a pleasure.
All right, we will be back. George will be back hosting the podcast on Sunday, looking back at the Crystal Palace match, and then the Thursday Club will be here this time next week. Have a lovely weekend. Come on, you whites.
You whites.